Yeah, it's a great question, Ed, and I believe it is being dealt with within PBR, because a lot of the assumptions, particularly the assumptions that are around withdrawal or lapse rates, are what we call dynamic assumptions, and so the interest rate environment, like if you were in a very high, say, interest rate environment where policyholders might say, well, I'm getting a really good return on, you know, on those products, you know, I'm not going to surrender them, but in a very, because we'd have to test a low interest rate environment if they didn't feel like, you know, they were earning a competitive rate of return and they could go elsewhere in the market to do that, then the dynamic assumptions, you know, for that interest rate scenario would reflect a higher level of lapse rates. But having said all that, you know, insurance is unique in that there's a huge inside deferral of, you know, federal income tax, you know, on the policies. And so when people save, buy annuities to save for retirement, or, you know, they're buying death benefit protection, there isn't that kind of bank-like need to convert that to cash. I mean, they want to keep the ultimate, you know, insurance benefit, and they want to keep the ultimate retirement benefit. So even though the product says, yeah, you can put this back to the company for the cash surrender value, there are implications with doing that. Tax, you know, being one, there's maybe surrender charges on the product, you know, is another. But I think the biggest focus from the formula base to the principles based is that prospective forward-looking look of what is the worst thing that could happen? And that's the whole purpose of running those many thousands of economic scenarios and evaluating the company's you know, results under those scenarios. Dave, I don't know if you had anything to add.
Yeah, just a quick, I mean, absolutely, principle-based reserves addressing exactly your point. I mean, that was one of the main drivers of PBR is that, yeah, products aren't the traditional whole life, you know, fixed premium, everything kind of, you kind of know what's going to happen. There's new products, new guarantees, secondary guarantees, a lot more complexity. We're kind of moving away from, you know, the traditional structure. So, yeah, and that's why we need to have these stochastic models to, as Larry just said, project what might happen under some of these adverse or multiple economic scenarios, and that's exactly the point for PBR.
Do you have a sense of how many of those software models are out there for companies to use?
Yeah, they're, like I said, cash flow testing has been out there for a while. I mean, some companies use their own internally built, but no, there's four or five sort of, I probably shouldn't mention them, risk of, but yeah, many of the consulting firms and software vendors out there. So yeah, there's a good competitive landscape to choose a model.
You recognize all these faces already as Mike, Jessica, and Larry, and this is really kind of a wrap up. So I don't know if they have, you know, comments that they want to make in terms of after now they've listened to each other talk. Maybe there's some things they want to talk about or just comment on. But in addition to that, if there are other questions that you can have thought of since their presentations, now would be the best chance to do that. But don't leave it all up to me. Oh, Chris has a question.
I'm not on the hot seat, so I'm excited. In talking about the variability of PNC estimates, we've talked a lot about the particular lines of business that are probably more difficult to perform the reserve valuation on. How much of the reserves on an industry total do you think are fairly easy to estimate versus what lines of business do you think are really difficult and maybe cause the problems that you've been talking about?
I can go first. Yeah, certainly the longer the tail, the harder it is to estimate. And we certainly see that borne out in the cycle graphs that we draw. So we have these cycle graphs by line of business. And actually, if any of you are interested in a copy of that, I can send you our report on that. So, and you can see for the really long-tailed lines, it is harder to estimate. So, for example, for medical professional liability, that does go up quite a lot, maybe. And when some years it's 40% higher than initially estimated for the whole industry. And then the short-tailed lines are super easy, as you'd hope.
So, Chris, you recruit us to speak on the panel, and then you ask us a hard question. Okay. I don't think anything is easy anymore. I once thought certain lines were really easy, and then KRW hit, and all of a sudden, you know, you're. And I just remember, like Katrina, you're now the energy business, and just you're now worrying about the price of oil for business interruption claims, and you saw that with Ike, and I don't think we've seen it with Sandy yet. But clearly, we've seen certain areas where I thought property was easy, and then Katrina just kind of threw that upside down. I mean, the beauty of it was a year later, it was pretty much done. You pretty much had it under control. But the issue you have, at least I thought I had, being part of a publicly traded company, you were living quarter to quarter. So when you're living quarter to quarter, and you know the analyst estimates are really focused on, you know, what changed from one quarter to the next quarter, you really, everything is under the microscope at that point. But it, as Jess said, the longer tail lines are just, they're just hard. Your feedback mechanism is so slow. And the example I gave in I think it was the second session, where this one company, and they shifted their business that was in, you know, it was all in one line of business, but they really changed their business model to write, you know, first hour primary to 2/3 of the business became excess and umbrella. And for 3 or 4 years, things were fine. They weren't seeing any development. They were kind of, oh, wow, things are behaving better than expected. And, you know, it was a failure to ask the right questions. It goes back to the, you know, has anything changed? Well, no, nothing's changed. Well, we're still running the same business, but you're not. You used to attach at zero. Now you're attaching at 100,000 or 500,000 or a million, so claims should be coming in more slowly. So I think they're all hard anymore.
Now, one of our subheadings here is managing the underwriting cycle, and I think Jessica did a good job of kind of setting up reasons that the underwriting cycle happens. But I thought it was very interesting that we saw four or five foreign countries that don't seem to experience underwriting cycles like we do in the U.S. Is there any hope for us in managing underwriting cycles and getting them a little more smooth than they are, or is this the dynamics between company management and the actuarial recommendations that works depending, you know, to cause both the hard or the soft markets?
I'll start. Sure. When you think about the underwriting cycle, I love to look back on what's happened. I guess what I felt, I think I said earlier that we are a learning industry, which is one of the things I love about the insurance industry. We try to learn from our mistakes. I'm not sure we've gotten everything right yet. But when I think of, I started my career in the 80s, so you know, right after you know the soft market of the early 80s. I did not see the soft market of the 70s, so I can't really talk about that. But what we've seen, I feel like every cycle we've learned something from. You know, the 80s, a lot of times it was, you know, bad pricing, not understanding the exposures, new capacity coming in, not understanding things. And then the 90s was really just this growth mode. It to me, it seemed like it was a production-oriented cycle, that there was such a focus on growing and growing that organizations kind of threw pricing aside. And it was embarrassing to say. That probably there were some strong actuarial indications that were probably just thrown away and ignored by management, maybe not management, by underwriters. And I just remember some of the conversations I've had with people that were really kind of in the trenches then was, you know, there was this belief that the business was, you know, we knew it was getting worse, but we didn't realize just how bad it was. And what I feel I've learned from that as an actuary or as a member of management is we really missed it that time. And how do we stop missing it? And part of it is better, I mentioned earlier, better price monitoring, understanding not only which way the prices are changing, because there's a lot of things that happen. You have to worry about inflation, tort cost. You have to worry about what the primary rates are doing, what the reinsurance rates are doing. But there's a piece of this is, are we giving away coverage that we didn't, that we didn't give away before? So our terms and conditions changing. And that was one that I think a lot of actuaries missed in the late 90s. And now what I see is, while we realize it's a hard thing to quantify, I think people are starting to pay attention to it. And I've seen organizations really get better at being networked. The one concern I have is information overflow. But what I do feel is you're seeing organizations say, you know, I've been down that road before. I know how that movie ends. I don't want to go there. So what I felt, and I saw this in 2007, 2009, I actually saw, and I might argue the soft market of the late 90s was caused by the reinsurance community, reinsurers, sorry. But, you know, really, maybe it was exacerbated. What I saw in 2007, 2009, as rates were beginning to dip, I saw some strong elements of discipline where the reinsurance community pushed back and said, no, we will not go there. So I feel like we've learned, will we not have another cycle? I doubt it. I think there will be another cycle. I think there will be another soft market. But will I think it's as bad as the 80s or 97 to 01? Probably not. And I also think that, you know, we'll probably figure it out sooner, because I think our analytics and our data and our ability to learn from lessons past has gotten better. But I also think you also saw the peaks, and I don't think the peaks last nearly as long as they used to. Long answer to a simple question, sorry.
Actually, one thing I want to say on that, sorry, Chris. You can come up, but I just want to shortly answer this question. So on the reserving cycle side, you know, interestingly enough, you bring up whether we see this in other countries, and I saw the slide that was up before for different countries. What we were finding, and I'll show you a slide, actually, because I do have it. Yeah, no, it's okay. It's okay now. So again, this is the U.S. workers' comp cycle outline, and I just wanted to show you, superimposed against that, what we found when we looked at U.K. employers' liability. So U.K. employers' liability is like workers' comp, essentially, but over in the U.K. So they're two similar but definitely distinct lines of business in different countries. And what do you think we found when we looked at the U.K. one? Do you think we found a similar cycle, or maybe a cycle but sort of at a different, goes up and down at different times? I don't know what you guys think. Do you think it would be a very similar cycle? Who thinks it would be similar? Put your hands up. Okay. Who thinks it'll be a cycle but up and down at different times? Okay. So it's about kind of half-half. And, you know, I asked this to a bunch of actuaries, and a lot of them went with a cycle but up and down at different times, because, you know, why would it be exactly the same time, right? So here's what we found when we looked at UK employers' liability. So to me, that's kind of a bit messier than our cycle, but it's sort of up and down at the same time. So how do we explain that? I don't know. But it is there. It's a fact. It is very highly correlated with our own workers' comp cycle. They're more conservative in the UK. So you can see in those years where things go bad, they really increase their estimate very quickly, whereas ours sort of stair-stepped over many years. And then when things go good, they really go down very slowly. So yeah, I just found that interesting.